You're listening to the Social Selling Simplified Podcast. Stick around if you too are obsessed with learning things that actually work and believe that success leaves clues. We're all about identifying results-producing roadmaps and getting super clear on how to scale and grow your online business. From part-timer to president, social selling expert Ashley Shaw will help you connect the dots and take the guesswork out of what works to grow a social selling empire. It's time to hear from social selling legends, listen in on truthful conversations, and learn the best tips and tricks to reduce the marketing overwhelm so you can build a social selling business of your dreams. If you're ready to go all in, no holding back, and build the business you've always wanted, you're in the right place. Here's your host, educator, social selling guru, and fitness industry OG, Ashley Shaw.
Welcome to Social Selling Simplified. I'm your host, Ashley Shaw, and today I have a very special guest. Sarah Archer is joining us today, and she was a senior HR leader by day and a comedian, writer, performer, and coach by night. But in 2017, Sarah said goodbye to the corporate world for good, and today she actually specializes in helping heart-centered entrepreneurs and businesswomen build their brand and sales by using storytelling and humor in their content on stage, off stage, and online. Sarah also has a podcast called The Speaking Club, which is in 150 plus countries to help people with all aspects of speaking, storytelling, and humor. Thank you so much for being here today, Sarah. I'm so excited to have you.
Oh, I'm really excited too. Thank you so much for having me. It's a real joy. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, this is such a hot topic, especially for social sellers when it comes to how do I tell my story to engage people and just get in front of my ideal customers. That is such a big conundrum we face. But before we dive into all of that, let's talk about this. How did this go transitioning from an HR leader to also being a comedian, a writer, performer, and coach? How did that all happen?
Well, I sort of been doing comedy. So I was in HR. I've always sort of done a bit of acting and dabbled. But so my daughter Isabel was just turning one. And my husband and I, as he was then, he's not anymore, but he was then, we went out on like a rare night out and to a comedy club. And the compere at the interval said, if anyone wants to tell a joke, then, you know, have a go. And I don't know if you ever get this. Sometimes my stomach knows I'm going to do something out of my comfort zone before I actually register. And so the butterfly started and I thought, oh, I'll give it a go. So I did. And I just told a joke. It wasn't my joke. It was one I'd heard. And I had a go and people laughed and I loved it. And so I did a course. And yeah, I've been doing comedy alongside sort of corporate for a long time. But you know, I never felt like I was living my purpose in the corporate world. I enjoyed HR and, you know, it's lovely to hear all the gossip, but it wasn't me. So I basically left. I do my business, the coaching people and consulting is what I do. I love it, but it also helps me do the things which don't pay. So I write plays and I perform, I act and do comedy, and those things aren't quite as lucrative. But the transition was, in some ways, HR is all about, you know, it's about influencing because you normally haven't got much power. So it was always, you know, sort of communicating and stuff. But yeah, it was, the first time I left in 2010, the business failed. And I learned some lessons from that, which I brought into what I do today. So the second time round, it's been a lot more successful.
I can only imagine the HR. It's so tough because it would have provided these hilarious stories. I remember working in corporate and just some of the things that I dealt with was, you know, obviously like there's these stories that lie that, you know, no names or anything will be mentioned, but you're like, this one time the guy went in the tanning bed and this is what I worked at gym. So it was like the stories were just out of this world. So
it's like people though, isn't it? That's the thing. It's like you can't write what happens in real life sometimes, which is pertinent to what we're going to talk about in a bit, you know? So it's fascinating.
Yeah, it really, really is. So tell us a little bit more about what you do now. What do people come to you for and what are you known for?
So basically, I think the key thing is around helping people to find their stories and power up their stories and deliver them, you know, in a way that compels people to take action, which is, you know, at the end of the day, I love the word sparketing because, you know, I teach people how to talk. But for me, speaking is a massive part of your marketing mix. And, you know, you only have to look at the likes of, you know, I often talk about the Squatty Potty ad, where in one advert, you know, with the unicorn and the prince, they managed to take people around the whole customer acquisition journey in 3 minutes. And when you tell a story on stage, when you connect with people, you know, or Facebook Lives or whatever, you have the opportunity to take them around that whole journey. And so I basically help people with their marketing, but through storytelling and humor.
Oh, I love that. And that's just such a great example, the Squatty Potty.
Yeah. So yeah, great. It's amazing. I mean, that was absolutely storytelling and humor all wrapped up in 1 3-minute powerhouse of content, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so when you're first getting to work with somebody on this, where do you start? Because I know there's a lot of social sellers out there that are going to feel like, cool, if I was a comedian, I worked in HR, I had, you know, an acting background, I'd have lots of stories. I'm a stay-at-home mom. How do I come up with stories?
Do you know what? It's so interesting. I get this a lot. People think I'm not creative. I'm not a natural-born storyteller. I don't have anything interesting to share. And do you know what? It's such a myth because everyone has magical stories to share. You know, as we talked about, you know, the stories that we can pick up from corporate of what human beings do, you know, are so interesting. And you only have to look at the sort of reality TV to know that people are absolutely interested in other people's lives. And so the beautiful thing about business as well, though, and this is what I always kind of start with when I'm coaching people and with my students, is in business, we're even luckier because we don't have to be J.K. Rowling. We don't have to be E.L. James. We're not starting with a blank sheet of paper because all of our stories, we need to relate them back to our customer's problem, their pain, their desires, and their objections. And so all I do is work with people, you know, I have a process I take them through to find the stories, to unlock their memories and find those stories because, you know, something happened at a party or on a holiday or, you know, there's a song that people have a memory attached to. And we just need to relate those stories back to our customer's problem and pain. And that's where the magic happens. And they don't have to be, you know, anything special. You know, I always like to talk about Caitlin Batcher's story. You know, she has made a mint out of one story where she came home and her husband said, oh, it's her kid's potluck at school. And he said, you know, we have to make macaroni cheese. She said, no, we'll buy it because that's our daughter's favorite. And it was all about, you know, just buying this macaroni cheese, but she related it back to you creating the content for your target customer and giving them what they want. You know, but that story, I've heard her tell it so many different places. Mm-hmm. And so we can repurpose those stories as well. And those are the ones that connect with people because they can relate to them. That's the power of them.
Mm-hmm. It's more the everyday story is more impactful than a lot of the stories we think we need to have.
Yeah, it's about, you know, I have a structure and I'm happy to share it with you. For the way that people can share their stories, you know, I call it my PAT structure. So it's, you know, you say what the problem is. So an example I would use is I tell a little story about goldfish. So the problem is that we often look on social media and we're comparing ourselves to other people. Mm-hmm. The other day I was feeding my goldfish and there's this one goldfish and he's the smallest goldfish. I'm assuming he may well be a girl. And so I feed him and instead of going for the food, he's too busy trying to stop all the other fish from getting the food. So if he just concentrated on getting the food, you know, he'd be fine. But he's so worried about what everyone else is doing that he's the smallest one. And so that is, you know, like what we do when we're on social media. So that's the structure. You sort of talk about the problem, a little anecdote, and then the takeaway, which is, you know, we need to be bothered about our own thing and in competition with ourselves yesterday or whatever it is. And that's a nice, really simple structure for sharing those stories on a Facebook Live or whatever.
Oh, I love that. And I have been, just as you started to unravel this story structure, do you have a book at this point?
I have a couple of books.
Okay, can you share those with us? Because this stuff is gold, and I'd love to know more about, what you've written.
So the two books I've written, funnily enough, one of them is actually on, it's called Straight to the Top. It's on how to create and deliver a killer elevator pitch. So that's particularly on your pitch. And then the other one is called Cracking Speechmate, how to add humor to make yourself an amazing speaker. I haven't written the storytelling book yet, but that will be one. But those all have story stuff within them. So yeah, those are the two that I've written.
Okay, I'm going to make sure to put those in the show notes, because you just have this knack for breaking it down and making it really feel easy, which is so refreshing. So refreshing. Yeah. So why do you believe that stories really work when it comes to social selling?
I know from personal experience. So I used to do network marketing. And
What did you sell? What kind of things?
In the UK, we have a company called Utility Warehouse, and it's gas, electric, so the utilities. So like, and it's a brilliant company. I'm still a customer of the company today. And so I basically went out, this was still when I was in corporate, I was doing a bit on the side. And what happened was, I was so passionate about the product that I basically went and vomited all of the benefits over the people. And one day my supervisor came out with me, and team leader, and they said, "Sarah, you sold it, then you bought it back again." And this is kind of when my first business failed. It was because I hadn't made the connection between what I do on stage, like in comedy and when I'm acting, it about telling a story. And in business, I was doing something different. You know, even in corporate, something different. We have a sort of, we put our presenter head on. And the reason why stories are so powerful, especially in social selling, network marketing, is because we have to lead people to the answer. Mm-hmm. We can't give them it. They need to have the epiphany about the product. And, you know, stories are an amazing way to get people to emotionally buy into the product first before we logically buy in. And this is the way that we do it. You know, if you've ever fallen in love with something, a hobby or an interest or whatever, you know, makeup, whatever it is, you're like, I've had this. I go and tell someone, a friend or a family member, and I'm so excited and tell them all about it. And not only do they not get excited, they start finding fault. And that's because what happened when we found out about it was we had that emotional buy-in first, probably through a story. Then we got excited about it. And then we went out and we found out all about it, all the logical stuff and perhaps all the jargon. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point we went to tell people about it. So we had this sort of techno babble that I vomited all over these people about all the benefits, but they hadn't had that emotional buy-in. And that is why stories are so powerful, because we almost have an experience vicariously through the hero of the story, have that emotional buy-in, and then that opens us up to be told about the benefits. So that's why they're so powerful. And almost like, oh, so you know, you've got me talking about, go on about this for ages, but when we tell stories, because we've been so conditioned as human beings by our mums telling us stories, we kind of go into this sort of flow state where our subconscious is opened up as well. So we're more receptive to being, you know, influenced, and that's why they work so well.
You nailed something for me, because I was scrolling on Instagram earlier today and I saw this post by somebody, and she had these two huge rings on, and she was like, "Which one do you like better?" And of course you're like, okay, what's this about, right? And it was, one of them was an oval shaped and one was some cushion or whatever it was. So I clicked on it, and you know, if she had just talked about the ring, I would have been like, bye-bye, I'm busy. Yeah. Like, I like the picture, cool, but I gotta go. But it didn't. She talked about how when she goes on vacation, she has worn her good jewelry before and lost it. And she described, you know, going into the safe, and that's where she typically locks things up, but she's misplaced really nice jewelry. And the link that she provided was to this, I call it Fakissimo collection of jewelry that looks real. and it was $35. I followed her through the whole thing because you're always warned about that. You remember that story about not wearing your fancy jewelry to the resort just in case someone takes it from you or it goes missing. And it was like, that just clicked for me. That's why I read it, because there was a story. If it was just about the benefits, you know?
Yeah, exactly right. It always can come in the tiniest of headlines as well. Like, that's what makes people pay attention as well, is that whole curiosity thing. You like, so, you know, it's so powerful, and they don't have to be this big novel. It's really just your everyday stuff that people can then see themselves, you know, and relate to.
In some way. Okay. I love that. And so when it comes to those people that don't think that they're creative or have things that are interesting to share, how would you recommend that they strategize around this? So we've talked about the everyday stuff. Mm. How do you take that and bring that into creating it as a story?
Yeah, so there's some definite things that we can do. So as you just talking about this lady with her jewelry and mm-hmm. stuff. So first thing that we can do is we can add some detail. So mm-hmm. when we talk about, even if it's like, it only has to be a few details. Remember, we can keep this brief, but, you know, kind of like what you saw, what you heard, you know, what you felt. You know, I walked through, I noticed that, you know, the floorboard was creaking or whatever, or the room, you know, you just describe a couple of details about it, and that brings it to life for people. That's when they start projecting themselves into the scenario. It might not even, they might not have the same room, but they can relate to the floor and the walls and whatever. So adding some details, making it specific. And then also using metaphors and imagery. Mm-hmm. So one of my clients, she has a chronic illness. She's an author. She's written this great book about how going outside pretty much saved her life. And she was talking about how she had planned for this wonderful retirement, and she'd had all, you know, all the things she was going to do, skiing and whatnot. And she lives in Canada. And she was telling me about this, and she just kind of said that she was stuck in her room. You know, she couldn't go outside. And I said, well, let's talk about you being in a prison cell, you know, you being, because, you know, that just things like that really power it up, because suddenly, you know what a prison cell is. That's a whole different level of power and emotion that you're bringing in to mm-hmm. rather than just her being stuck in a room. So another thing that you can do is add analogies. So one of the guys I love, a guy called Russell Brunson, I love this example, because when he was talking about giving people a strategy or, you know, tool, I can't remember exactly what it was, mm-hmm. he described it as if, you know, in Back to the Future, when Biff Tannen goes back and gives his young self the sports almanac with all of the results. And Russell said, it's like me giving you this is like me giving you that sports almanac. It's mm-hmm. like the play, you know, so if you can do stuff like that, immediately it puts things in a different light for people, and it makes it so much more powerful. And that's sort of what you were looking for.
Yeah, definitely. So what you see, you're hearing, what you're feeling, the imagery. So let's talk about metaphors and analogies for a second. So this is where I get mine. So I'm curious where you get yours. Honestly, I listen to comedians because they got lots of those and I write them down. I also listen to some rap songs. There's a lot in there too. And that's honestly my main source. I watch for things and I write them down. But where do you come up with that stuff if you want to have it free flowing? And yeah, is there anywhere else you should be looking?
No, those are great places. Well, I guess movies. Like mm-hmm. movies are a brilliant source of your favorite novels, like mm-hmm. things that, you know, songs, like you say, lyrics, anywhere, like a painting, you know, I don't know if you've seen that painting Munch's Scream, where the person is like, you know, mm-hmm. so you could like it, or, you know, if someone was miserable, you know, she looked like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I've forgotten the name. What's the, in Paris, in Louvre, the famous painting?
Mona Lisa?
That's the one, yeah. So something like that. So like you can just say, and it's quite funny sometimes as well. If you can actually, you know, bring, you know, caricature people, you know, not in a nasty way, but like she was so surprised, you know, her eyebrows rose higher than SpaceX or what, you know, something, you know, it just brings its life. But yeah, comics, that's how we create our material for comedy. We literally brainstorm and make connections. especially we exaggerate mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great call. But yeah, you know, things around you, things that mean stuff to you, you know, in the garden, flowers growing, it's all around us. We just need to be, you know, taking that stuff in and keeping a note of it. You know, you get your get your phone out on notes mm-hmm. And you know, and just sort of capture those things when it occurs to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it also just reminded me of how impactful memes are, because it's this exaggeration of this moment that, you know, I love using memes for sharing purposes or emails or things like that, because it just, that imagery, you know, it can sometimes just hit it so hard. I love using memes.
Yeah. And scientifically, the reason why we use imagery as well is because our brains are wired to process imagery faster, you know, so it gets retained quicker and it's easier for our brains to access. Mm. So creating images, it makes it more concrete for people, and it actually, you know, we remember it much better because we file the image and the words, we're getting double the retention, if you like. So memes are brilliant.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I love when things like that just all of a sudden connect and you're like, that's why that works. Because then there's something about that that makes it sticky and easy to repeat over and over again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And although I don't understand memes. My daughter keeps showing me memes and I don't think they're funny at all. Like,
you're not looking at the right ones. That's why. I'll send you some memes. I love the meme game. I'm all over it.
Oh, no, I did play that. That was well cool. That was really funny. Yeah.
So how do you think that we can actually make our stories more sticky? So we start paying attention to the everyday. We're starting to do these things, like think about the detail, thinking about more metaphors and imagery. How do we make them stick for people?
Just literally like that. It is making things more concrete by, you know, those are exactly the things. So creating the image. So when I'm teaching people, you know, public speaking is a big part of this. So when I'm coaching my speakers, you know, if they are saying something on stage, you know, I completely stay away from slides with lots of words. But if they just have an image behind them, which speaks to what they're saying, it's making those connections for people. And, you know, that's literally, that is it. Detail, the metaphors, the imagery. It could be, you know, the way you say something could also make it stick in someone's mind, you know, and also, you know, making people pay attention as well. Sometimes if you use silence, like that can make people really like, what? You know, did I miss? Like, so yeah, those are the real things. But, and humor, obviously, I couldn't, you know, humor is another way to make things stick with people. So if you can turn something into a joke that people love to share humor in, that's also very good. Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that. So I know that you teach about humor as well. How does that tie into people remembering things and work that side of the brain that people want to pay attention?
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things that I'm really focusing on teaching people is around getting attention. So I hadn't made the connection myself. I'm back to, you know, when I do comedy, if I don't get the audience's attention, mm-hmm. I don't get another gig, I don't get laughs. And so I might even get gonged off depending on what show I would be doing. So what we don't realize when we're talking to people is that people listen through every bit of information we receive goes first through our reptilian brain. It's the oldest part of our brain. There's three parts of the brain. And the croc brain is the bit where everything comes in. And they basically, the croc brain's like, is it going to kill me? Is it new and exciting? Is it complicated? And if it's not going to kill you, it will ignore it. If it's too complicated, it will ignore it. So it needs to be new. So the curiosity part and the desire part, there's two chemicals that fire it to get attention, and that's dopamine and something called norepinephrine. And dopamine is all about anticipation of reward and surprise. And also norepinephrine is around fear of loss. And so curiosity is a massive attention getter. So, and funnily enough, in comedy, surprise is the biggest element of a joke. Mm. And, you know, comedy and magic use this sort of mix of anticipation of reward. You know, there's going to be a payoff at some point, and the curiosity, how's it going to get there? And comedy and magic has something in common. It's all about misdirection, basically. So we basically set up a joke to make you make an assumption that it's going to go one way, and then we pull the rug out. And an easy way to do that, you know, an exaggeration in itself is, you know, if you're having a sentence, you're talking about someone, and then you suddenly say, you know, you exaggerate something, you know, about that situation all the way, that that is a surprise. So that's a great way. People don't expect, you know, to usually go, you know, huge with an exaggeration. But also, you know, I love to talk about the rule of three, because it's such an easy one. So, you know, rule of three is magical anyway. We remember three to five things. That's why it's so important. But in comedy, the rule of three is it takes two things to set up a pattern, and then the third thing breaks it. So, yeah, you only have two things which are fairly normal. I think when we were doing the mastermind, I was talking about one of the ladies on there has a product, and her target customer could be other parents and stuff. So if you say something like, you know, things that you've always wanted to do, have more time for, I don't know, for spending time with your children, or, you know, taking the dog for a walk, and making that birthday cake like I've always done. You know, so it's like you're taking that last thing and twisting it and making it something unexpected. That's where the humor comes from. And that's what makes it sticky, is the surprise angle.
So basically how we could apply this to social selling is, when you're looking at your headlines, make sure that they have those three things, like the newness or curiosity. They're not complicated, that people can't understand. And then the other one is, did you say the third one is the reptile brain that says it's either going to kill you or it's not?
See, I talk about, you know, certainly when you write a post, when you're doing Facebook Live, when you're doing a talk, you've got to get people in first. So that headline, that post title, absolutely, that hook has got to hook them in. Mm-hmm. And it has got to be, you know, there's three triggers for action. They are desire, their fear, and their curiosity. Mm. And unfortunately, desire isn't the most powerful. Fear is the most powerful. So, you know, how to avoid looking, you know, how to stay looking young, whatever. So you've got some curiosity in there. There is a bit of desire in that one, actually, but fear and curiosity are the biggest ones. So you kind of leave, so Shanine Johnson's great at doing this in her Instagram post. So she'll leave a cliffhanger, leave a gap, hint at a story, but the whole point of them is enticing them to click on, to listen to the Facebook Live, to find out more. So it's leaving those gaps and creating curiosity is the biggest thing, in that scenario.
Okay. And then the rule of three, we're looking at two things that go together, where the third one is sort of surprising, breaks that pattern. I think they're, you know, either probably at that point they're deciding, am I going to keep reading or not? And then that thing picks it up and they want to keep reading because of it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in marketing as well, this whole gap creation curiosity, we call it sort of problem solution problem as well, where you, you know, and it's great to do this, you know, when you're talking, is create a problem, maybe leave it hanging and then come back to it. And also, like, you can start a story and then, you know, say, and I'll come back to that in a bit, if you leave it on a bit of a cliffhanger. So you could start a Facebook Live by, you know, talking about something that happened, leave it sort of hanging for a bit, and I'll come back to that, but I really, you know, want to talk to you about this, and then we'll cycle back. And so you've got them, they want to find out what's going to happen next. So yeah, all that good stuff.
Okay, love that. So in terms of making our stories funnier, do you have any tips for how we could do that when it comes to social and putting posts out there or lives? How do we just, if we're like a 5 out of 10 for funniness, how do we get ourselves to 6 or 7?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is reflecting the truth of the situation. So comedians, you know, one of the things that they do that makes them funny is, you know, they say things that are in people's heads, but they don't talk about, or they don't say. So, and even if you don't have to even be completely obvious with it. You know, it's a bit, you know, in the UK, we have things like innuendo. That's maybe it's, you have to be careful with that. But it's sort of like, you know, being real, sort of hinting at the things that people, you know, think but don't say. And yet exaggeration is, and contrast. So in comedy, contrast is another great sort of comedy tool, is what I call big, big, small. So, you know, for a woman who says, I've got three big goals for the next 10 years of my life. I'm going to cure, you know, world hunger, or contribute to curing world hunger. I am going to go and build a village in Africa, and I'm going to fit into a size six. You know, so it's like, it's kind of like you're setting, you know, that's sort of the opposite. Again, you're setting up a pattern, but it's, you know, so there's, there's things like that, but contrast between something, you know, logical and illogical, exaggerated, that really gets people's attention. And that's what memes do as well, you know. So you're onto a good thing with the memes, I think. So, yeah. But you've got to disrupt people. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. And I think I was going to ask you for an example, because I think sometimes it's easier to get our heads wrapped around it when we can see, okay, how can that actually be used? So I love that. The big, big, small.
Yeah. Yeah. You could have like, to two big things, and then get my kid to tidy their room, or, you know, just like things like that, that again, people can relate to from their own lives, but in that context, it become quite funny.
And so when it comes to, you know, doing Facebook Lives or anything around speaking, like I know this is an area of expertise for you around speaking events and teaching people how to do this. So what is the biggest mistake that you would say that you see people make, or quick, easy ways that they can improve that, that going live or that presenting type muscle?
I mean, definitely the biggest mistake, and just go back to that croc brain, is that when we're creating our content, we tend to make the mistake, we create the content with the newest part of our brain, our neocortex. So it's quite intellectual. But actually, what we've got to remember is that we're talking to the croc brain. So, it, you know, you've got to get that shock. So the first thing, I have something called a lightning bolt. So lightning bolt opening and close, you know, a really slightly provocative question, you know, a statement that you and I, there's a guy called Brandon Lucero who talks about thought reversal. So stating something that is polarizing, that is going to ruffle a few feathers and arouse that curiosity, is a great way of opening a Facebook Live. And then, or going straight into, you know, a funny thing happened to me today. And then, you know, sort of, and then doing that pat structure. But I think, you know, the biggest thing that I also say is, and I, Facebook Lives create so much anxiety for people, even for me. Like, I'm happy to do stand-up comedy, you know, but that doing those Facebook Lives, I find so challenging. So I completely can relate to it. But one of the things that I tell my students is that you are the vehicle for the message. It's not about you. You know, once you realize that, you know, it's not about you, you take the spotlight off of you, and your job is to get that message across. So if you're doing social selling, you have a product that you believe in, you believe can change someone's life in a positive way, and it's an opportunity for people. So when, you know, whatever the story is or whatever the end game is, that you can positively influence someone's life, or if you're trying to get them onto your team, you have the ability to give them an opportunity, you know, for the, financially to change their life, whatever it is. So you, your job is just to focus on delivering that message and take the spotlight off of you. And to be honest, you know, we have this idea that everyone's running around worrying about us, and people just come bothered about themselves, you know, most of the time. So, you know, there is a level of judgment, but if you can focus on it's not about you, it's about the message, I find that takes a hell of a lot of pressure off. And you're just there to get that across to people and potentially, you know, offer them a great opportunity that could change their life or someone they love.
Well, and I always think with Facebook Lives or Insta Stories, I guess I've become more and more comfortable with it. But I never stop and watch someone's story that I'm truly not interested in. And that's what I sort of always think about when I'm doing lives or I'm doing stories now. That was sort of a shift for me, is that nobody is going to be clicking on me if they're already, nope, she never has anything good to say.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's not what happens. Like, people have to pique an interest in you. And if you think about your audience is just those people that already really like you and love your quirks and everything that comes with it, that's the only people you're talking to. It's not some stranger that is jumping on to judge. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. And it is also back to that thing, like if, you know, if your message only reaches one person, but you have an impact on them, that is so cool. You know, never mind anyone else, just that one person. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just be you, because there's no one else out there that is you. And some of the things that you think are maybe quirky about yourself are probably what people find attractive about you and the reason that they like you. So, you know, that's one of the things that I work really hard with my students on, is just to be themselves. Yes, you need to bring a bit more energy, whether it's a Facebook Live, whether it's a presentation. But essentially, you know, it's about you only in as much as you are that vehicle. So all of the things that you do is to, you know, to engage, it's about getting that message across. But there's no one better than you for sharing that message. So,
I love that. So, have you got any tips for our listeners on anything else that, you know, really has, I guess, shifted for you, like your biggest takeaways? Because you've done many, many things, from speaking on stage, that has obviously been in many facets of your life. That is a big part of what you do, helping coach other people in, you know, their speaking and their storytelling. So what would you say is, if we were to leave them with two or three things that are the biggest takeaways you've learned on this journey, what would those be?
So definitely about being yourself, you know, that, like, that is a really key thing. Just, and also, once, for that time that you're talking to people, being really present in that moment and trusting that the right words will come. Because, you know, for a long, long time, you know, one of the things I did wrong with comedy was when I started out, everything in comedy is scripted. You know, all the off-the-cuff stuff, it's all scripted. But you need to, at some point, you need to let go of the script and trust that the right words will come. And the funniest thing is, when I'm working with, you know, I was doing a, working with some entrepreneurs, some startup people in a pitching competition. And I was prepping them before they were going to go before this really big sort of VC funding panel. And they had amazing companies. They had amazing stories. And they would start their pitch and they'd go into this like presenter mode. And it was really bizarre. They weren't themselves. But as soon as we switched into the Q&A part, they kind of relaxed and they went into their expertise, and they came back, their personality came back. So, you know, just the biggest thing is, as long as you do the prep, I'm not saying don't prep. So before you do a Facebook Live, before you go on stage, do think about the intention of your message. Do think about where you want people to get to and where they are. But once you've done that prep, just trust that the right words will come. And as long as you leave your critic, you know, we have two sides to us. We have our creator side and our critic side. And so often we take the critic on stage with us or onto the Facebook Live. So leave the critic off stage, be really present in the moment and trust that the right words will come. I think those are some of the biggest things I've had to learn in my journey. And also to sometimes just hold the space. You know, the silence is a great way to get people to refocus and stuff as well. So, and is unexpected. Yeah. So I think those, hopefully there's some tips in there for you, but yeah, be yourself and leave the critic off stage. Trust that the right words will come.
You reminded me of something that I had this boss, and back when I was working in corporate, it came from this shocking sort of employee experience. I had this, she was a manager of some fitness clubs and stuff, and she had a really bad day. It was like the worst of things. She had this sort of car that she knew like needed to be replaced, but she wasn't ready to spend the money on it. She had gone in the parking lot and some member had backed up into her, and she was just having the worst day. And I remember telling my boss, I was like, whoa, that was crazy. Because I remember asking her a couple questions about, you know, how you doing today, this sort of thing. And like, she was so grumpy with me. And I had never experienced that before. Just working in the corporate world, even if you were having the worst day, usually people were able to still look on the positive side and just, I don't know, like I never had this sort of interaction with someone that worked with me before where she was almost taking it a little bit out on me. Yeah. And I remember saying to my boss, Jeff, I was like, hey, I don't know what's going on here. I've never seen anything like this. And I'm going to have, you know, kind of a come to Jesus sort of conversation here, right? And he was, Ashley, it's the family treatment. That's what you're getting. Just consider it. That's just how you treat family. She obviously trusts you. And it made me kind of, whoa, maybe I got to take a step back here a bit. And what sort of came of that, and I always tell on my Facebook Lives when we're talking about this sort of like getting in front of the camera and being yourself, like I'm not saying get in front of the camera and give them the family treatment, but I sort of am. Like there's a way that I talk to my sisters that I just don't hold back. I will use voices and I just talk, you know, like I don't care. They're not going to judge me. That's what I think is the real magic when you can get comfortable talking to your audience in that same way, like the family treatment and just being yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly that. And I coach people how to do comedy. So they do their own 5 minutes of comedy and they go on stage. And it's just like, and speaking is the same, having a conversation with someone down the pub or, you know, coffee or whatever, that is the way, just ramping up the energy a bit more and having a little bit of strategy behind it. Yes. Like that is it. That is exactly it for mm-hmm. sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just blew me away with so many cool things to take away from this episode. You brought us so many things on this episode today that I am so excited to share with all of our listeners. So when they want to track you down and find out more about what you do, you know, they want to follow you, they want to download some of your freebies or whatever you've got out there, where can they find you?
So definitely check out the Speaking Club podcast. There's over 100 episodes there and the contents, it's not just me. I have some wonderful guests on as well. So that's a good place, speakingclub.com or on Apple Podcast. Come to my website, saraharcher.co.uk. I have a couple of freebies there. One of them I think would be perfect around this, and it's called My Story Wizard. And you'll see Roderick the Wizard there, and he's going to help you find your stories, use some of the tricks that I've been talking about today, and also a story structure. And I'm on Instagram, at saraharcher15. There's also a Facebook group. But yeah, you can find me, just type in Sarah Archer and I'm knocking around some places. So Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, wherever, Facebook, oh. Yeah.
When you said your Instagram, I was like, well, who is Sarah Archer 14? I want to know now. You've opened this loop.
It must be a very common name.
Must be. Must be.
What number are we up to now? No idea. But yeah. It is, but it's 15. Awesome. 15 is the one you
15
want.
15 is the one, the real one. The real Sarah Archer. Yeah, exactly. At Sarah Archer 15. Awesome. I am definitely going to check out all of that stuff. The Story Wizard sounds amazing. Thank you so much, Sarah, for being on the podcast and sharing all your wisdom with us.
Thank you for having me, Ashley. It's lovely to have had the opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you so much for listening to Social Selling Simplified. Now, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode, because you never know when there's going to be a guest or a topic that absolutely changes your business and changes your life. I'd also love for you to leave us an honest review that we can definitely be in touch with what you want to hear more of and what topics are really making an impact in your business. Now, if you want to take it a step further, there is an awesome quiz that we've put together to help you understand what you need to do to grow your social selling business. Now, when you go to ashleyshaw.ca/quiz, you're going to be able to discover the biggest priorities in your business, how to remove roadblocks and hone in on where to spend your time and create the social selling business of your dreams. And that's at ashleyshaw.ca/quiz. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on Social Selling Simplified.